My dear sir, it appears that the influence of your great spiritual knowledge is hidden. Factually, you are bereft of all material association and fully absorbed in the thought of the Supreme. Consequently, you are unlimitedly advanced in spiritual knowledge. Please tell me why you are wandering around like a dullard. O great saintly person, you have spoken words approved by the yogic process, but it is not possible for us to understand what you have said. Therefore, kindly explain it. Purport. Saintly people like Jadavara do not speak ordinary words. Whatever they say is approved by great yogis and those advanced in spiritual life. That is the difference between ordinary people and saintly people. The listener must also be advanced to understand the words of such exalted, spiritually advanced people as Jadavarat. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna, not to others. Lord Krishna especially selected Arjuna for instruction in spiritual knowledge because Arjuna happened to be a great devotee and confidential friend. Similarly, great personalities also speak to the advanced, not to Shudras, Vaishyas, women, or unintelligent men. Sometimes it is very risky to give great philosophical instructions to ordinary people. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the benefit of the fallen souls of Kali Yuga, has given us a very nice instrument, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. The general mass of people, although Shudras and less, can be purified by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. Then they can understand the exalted philosophical statements of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Our Krishna conscious movement has therefore adopted the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for the general masses. When people gradually become purified, they are instructed in the lessons of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Materialistic people like Stri, Shudra and Dvijabandhu cannot understand words of spiritual advancement, yet one can take to the shelter of a Vaishnav, for he knows the art of enlightening even Shudras in the highly elevated subject matter spoken in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Jadavarat was fully enlightened in spiritual knowledge, which is why he chose to appear as a dullard. That's the exact translation of Jadavat. Jada means dull, and Jadavat means like one who is dull. So he appeared like a dullard. You know what that means, dullard? It means dull-headed person. Foolish. Slow. Not quick to catch things. So Jadavarat appeared to be like that. He appeared to Maharaj Rahugana to be dull-headed because he was press-ganged. You also don't know what that means. Forced to carry the... You know what that means, press-ganged? You don't know what it means either. Well, at some point in English history, I'm not sure exactly when, they would gangs hired by the navy, the fighting navy, they would go on the streets and press or force people into, they would constrict people forcibly, they'd take them and grab them. So without their any choice, it doesn't matter their family, this, that, the other, they're on a ship and they're sailing for the queen or the king. I don't know if it was pre-Victorian times, so it would be for the king. So press gang, they were forcibly, Jadavarat was forcibly engaged in the service of Maharaj Rahugana, carrying his palanquin. So a palanquin is generally carried by four people or more. Four or eight, if it's a big heavy palanquin, or a big heavy king, or whoever, passenger. whoever's going, and maybe more. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to go daily from his home in Choti to Kendrapara. He was teaching in the school. He used to go by palanquin, carried by men, running. And he would lie down and sleep in it daily. So I was told when I visited Choti. So the carriers of the palanquin, they have to act in concert. If one is trying to go fast and the other one is trying to go slow, it doesn't work, does it? It's like in kirtan, when someone's trying to... I always have that frustration that I try to lead slowly and gradually build up to a faster tempo. But very few devotees in ISKCON know anything but fast, except they know very fast, that's all. So, to be sweet, the kirtan should be slow and then gradually speed up. So it's very difficult if someone's singing and leading at one tempo and the mridanga player has another idea. Actually, the mridanga player was in time, but it was others who weren't. So Jarabharat was not in tempo, not in sync with the other palanquin carriers. There was a reason for that, because he was looking down and seeing the ants running around and he didn't want to tread on the ants. So he was trying to stop and then all the palanquin bearers should be at the same, approximately, more or less the same height. But he would like tiptoe and then he would go jerking the palanquin up. And all in all, the king was getting a pretty uncomfortable ride, and he understood it was because of Jarabharat, because previously, the previous carrier, I don't know what happened to him, maybe he collapsed or something, doesn't say. It was all right until they got Jarabharat, and then he was not carrying it properly. Although he looked like a dull person, it was called Jara, which means dull. But it was expected that even such a dull-headed person could at least carry a palanquin without too much difficulty. I mean, even a bull can be trained. And bulls aren't very intelligent. Bulls can be trained to plow fields and work in unison, usually two can pull a cart or a plow, sometimes more, sometimes they put four, like that. So he appeared to be very dull to the king who was being carried, and he chastised him for that. Although someone's actually so dull, then you may wonder what's the use of verbally chastising them, rebuking them. What's the value? If someone's got some intelligence, and if you rebuke them, then they should be able to rectify themselves. But if they're really stupid, then the only benefit is that the person who feels annoyed gets it off his chest, so to speak. You know what that means? Gets it off his chest. That means to, you have a feeling in your, you have a feeling of frustration in your, you can feel it here, right? So, you shout at someone and you feel, okay, now I feel okay. I got rid of it. So it's called getting it off your chest. So, Jarabharat, he appeared to be very dull, but he was taking the position of a dullard due to his spiritual advancement. Usually, as Maharaj Rahugana is expressing here, usually you expect a spiritually advanced person to act and speak in a highly cultured manner, in a sophisticated manner. Sophisticated not in the worldly sense, but he's at the highest platform of realization, so therefore you would expect his behavior to be better than that of others. But Jarbarat appeared to be just like a madman. He didn't speak to others, didn't bathe properly. In his youth, his father was trying to teach him how to chant the Gayatri Mantra, but he appeared to be incapable of chanting it. And he'd do all things round the wrong way. He would, instead of taking bath after passing stool, he would take bath before and then go and pass stool. So, sounds kind of stupid, doesn't it? But he was playing the role of a stupid man. Like, you might think, well, I'm not going to have much, it's going to be a rush tomorrow morning, I'm not going to have time to take bath before Mangalati, it seems, so okay, I'll take it at night. And you go to sleep and get up in the morning. It doesn't work. There are certain things have to be done at certain times. It's just the nitya kriya, the daily activities of any sane person, not even a cultured person. They rise early in the morning, they clean their teeth and they take bath and they perform some spiritually oriented activities. But Jadbharat didn't do any of these things because he just wanted to live his life and die. That's all he wanted to do. He didn't want to have anything to do with this world. So to avoid having anything to do with this world, he didn't interact with it. He didn't interact with anyone. And he deliberately appeared as if he was a madman, which he wasn't. He was fully fixed in spiritual knowledge, as is apparent from his words. Maharaj Rahugana was the first person that Jarbarat spoke to in this life. He was the first person that he spoke to in a coherent manner. But he was so coherent that Maharaj Rahugana was shocked, because he didn't just speak to him. Maharaj Rahugana thought that he is a crazy, dull fellow. You can't get much sense out of him. But he not only gave a reply that was on the normal level of sense, but even transcended the normal level of sense and explained that what Jarbarat was doing was not only not an offense to Maharaj Rahugana, but it was actually the best thing that he could and should be doing in that circumstance. And then he chastised Maharaj Rahugana, who was chastising him, that you think you're hollering at me. Holler, you know what that means? It means just yell and scream. You're going to have an English lesson while the Bhagavatam class is going on. You're yelling at me because you think you are the Maharaj of Sovia, which Sovia, I believe that's Saurashtra in modern geographical terms. So you think you're the Maharaj of Sovia, and you think you have a right to yell and scream at me, but you're calling me a fool, but actually you are a fool, because you think you are the Maharaj of Sylvia, but you're not. It's just a temporary situation. And you think you have a right to yell and scream at me. Well, maybe in the next life someone will yell and scream at you. Now they don't do it because you're in a big position. But positions change. What you think you've got the right to just press gang me into service, but why? Why should that be? Why, just because you're the king, you can just grab a citizen off the street and force him to do some service? that the king, he can take service from the citizens, but in that way that he was doing it, he was just taking advantage of his position. I mean, he could have requested, or actually he could do also, because, you know, if he's a king, he's got some important work to do. If he's a king, actually, he must have been traveling with so many soldiers and this and that, but he just pulled someone off the street. So you can take service from the citizens, but you should also be considerate to their needs. And to take service freely, that's also not proper. You didn't ask what I'm doing, where I'm going. So you're just taking advantage of your position. So that's Jarbarat said, and he also gave the high spiritual knowledge of the difference between the soul and the body. Now, Rahugana Maharaj, this is all new to him. Despite being born in the Vedic culture, he doesn't seem to be very tuned into the Vedic knowledge. It may be. I mean, it's not that everyone who's born into the Vedic culture becomes knowledgeable, even if they have some superficial instruction in it. Born in the Vedic culture means everyone should know that we're born again and again. But just like now in India, we see that due to lack of spiritual instruction, most Hindus have some kind of general faith that they generally believe that because we're Hindus, we believe that we're born again. But many people doubt it, or they ask, what is the proof of it? And they have no idea how it works. So, for lack of spiritual instruction, one may have some vague idea about it, but no clear understanding. So, Jarbarat, he spoke elevated spiritual knowledge to Maharaj Rahugana, which was the last thing he was expecting from Jarbarat. But it just goes to show that Jarbarat, even though he appeared to be very dull, was all the time situated in spiritual knowledge. He was sthita pragya, he was fixed in the highest level of realized intelligence. So he was able to shed the light of realized knowledge on that situation. As far as Maharaj Rahugana and everyone else there was concerned, they were just going along and they'd forcibly engage someone to carry the palanquin. Shri Jarbarat, he didn't forcibly, means he agreed to do it, because he could have refused also. And then they might have beaten him or even killed him, but he didn't care at all. As was shown when he was captured by dacoits who wanted to use him as a human sacrifice, as a sacrifice to Kali. He didn't resist. They put his head down and he was ready to go under the chopper. He didn't resist. But Kali herself didn't like it. So she came. She manifested herself and killed all the dacoits. So Jarbarat, he's not Jara. He's in every situation situated on the highest level of spiritual knowledge. But Maharaj Rahugana, even though this was explained to him by Jarbarat, he could understand this is a saintly person, but he didn't understand what he was saying, and he asked him to explain it. And practically Jarbarat, he repeats all that, what he has to say. He explains that. Now here Srila Prabhupada comments that the listener must also be advanced to understand the words of such exalted, spiritually advanced people as Jara Bharat. So, it also requires some... Here Prabhupada is making the point that someone may speak spiritual knowledge, but it requires a qualified hearer also. Now, sometimes we hear, we say, well, we should hear, we should listen to the highest topics. We should listen to a Maha Maha Paramahamsa Super XY Squared Bhagavat. Don't just listen to someone who's, you know, they're just a normal devotee. You should listen to a Ashto Tarashata, etc. Super Maha Bhagavat, about the highest topics. So you may have a Super Maha Bhagavat guru, but what's your qualification? Are you qualified to understand? You may say this devotee is so great because he speaks on the highest topics. Well, I would say that Prabhupada is so great because he spoke on the high topics of Bhagavad Gita, which are actually the beginning topics. And he spoke on these topics, what people needed to hear. He was speaking for their benefit, what would actually help them. And by speaking in this way, he gradually raised them to the platform of spiritual understanding. So, the speaker should also consider the qualification of the hearers. And generally, everyone considers their own qualification to be higher than it actually is, because that's a symptom of conditioned life. Everyone thinks I'm very great. So people, some devotees put a lot of stress on the, you know, your guru's got to be a super paramahamsa, but factually speaking, we see that those who become disciples of those who are advertised as super paramahamsas, they don't seem to do any better in spiritual life than those who are not advertised as super paramahamsas, because one has to follow the basic instructions given by Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas and come gradually through the platform of ādo, śraddhā, tata, sadhu, saṅgha, bhajana, kriya, tato, nārta, nivritti, syat, tato, ruchis, tato, nishtā, ruchis, tata, and atā, saktis, tato, bhāvat, atā, prema, abhyudanchati, sādhakānam, ayang, prema, prādur, bhāve, bhavet, kramaha, bhavet, kramaha. Pradur bhave it bhavet, it becomes manifest. How? Kramaha, gradually, step by step. So the stages are there. Initial faith, associating with devotees, sadhu sangha, then engaging in the practical activities of devotional service, becoming free from unwanted activities and unwanted attitudes and contaminations, then becoming steady and firm in Krishna consciousness, gaining taste, then attachment to Krishna consciousness, then the preliminary stage of ecstasy, and then praying. So it's not that you, this idea that you find a super maha bhagavat and then all of a sudden you shoot through, you break the sound barrier and shoot through to instant praying, but it doesn't happen. See, so many who thought that I have to get the super, super maha guru, but they don't even practicing the basic activities of Krishna consciousness. Although if you want to speak to, they won't want to listen to like ordinary or beginning topics. They only want to listen to the highest topics. But then they can't even follow the basic things. So, practical. Srila Prabhupada is a practical philosopher. He gave us the practical knowledge, the practical process by which we can gradually come to the highest level There's some qualification required to be a hearer, and Srila Prabhupada addresses this in the purport, that in Kali Yoga people are very dull. Stri Shudra Dvijabandhunam Trayina Veda Gochara. Prabhupada has quoted twice in this purport from the information taken from the Bhagavatam, that Stri Shudra and Dvijabandhu, women, Shudras, the class in Varnashram of laborers and artisans, and Dvijabandhu, the fallen descendants of the higher orders, they are not fit for hearing the Vedas. So in Kali Yoga, everyone is fallen. So Srila Prabhupada writes that, therefore, we introduce Sankirtan, let people take part in the chanting, and that will purify them so they can gradually understand this philosophy. Okay, short class this morning. Any question?
Why are these called jara if it is offense?
Well, he's called Jara, which means dull. That was the standard name given to him by others because he appeared like that. And Jara means foolish also. So he appeared like a dull fool. But it can also be understood in another way that he is dull in regard to material activities, which is actually what it means. He's not dull in the absolute sense. He's most elevated and exalted. But it's just like we may say that in so many words, they can be understood in two ways, from the relative material or the relative material platform and from the spiritual platform. That's called Agya Rudhi or Sadharan Rudhi. Agya Rudhi means the meaning of a word understood by foolish people. Sadharan Rudhi means the standard meaning, which is usually the same thing because most people are foolish. And then Vidvad Rudhi means the understanding of persons who are actually learned in Shastra. So we find so many times Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he interprets the insults of the demons against Krishna, what they intend as insults, and he reinterprets it and says that Sarasvati has entered their mouths because she doesn't want Krishna to be blasphemed. And so the actual meaning is not the bad one, but the good one, just like Shishupal calls Krishna Naradhama, the lowest of men. But that can also be understood, one who makes all others go down. So that means he's the supreme. So like this.
Jada Bharatam was self-realized person all his life, but he could actually use the opportunity to preach.
He could have used the opportunity to preach, but he didn't. Eventually, when he came in contact with Maharaj Rahugana, he preached to him. Why didn't he? Well, not all saintly persons in history have preached. The preaching that's there, there are certain preachers. Narad Muni is liberated spaceman, Prabhupada says. But preaching is especially stressed in this Kali Yoga by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. Otherwise, traditionally, the system is that first one sees who's qualified to approach a guru. The question of qualification is that only those who are qualified, they would be sent by their parents, or they themselves might seek out a guru. The saintly people didn't go around searching out others. They would, who wants, they would seek out such a person. Who is sincere, they would seek out a spiritual guide.
Gimpi said he preached by his example.
Preached by example, yes, of course. That's the, yeah. But the preaching is generally understood to mean precept accompanied by practice, not only practice. In that sense, every Vaishnava is a preacher, but still we discriminate between Goshtyanandi, those who make the effort to bring others to Krishna consciousness by their speaking, and Bhajanandi, one who's content simply to perform bhajan.
Maharaj, you mentioned different stages in devotional service. So, how we can understand which stage we are and
how can we understand which stage we are on? Well, they all have their, all these levels of devotional service have their symptoms described, and there's interacting also. It's just like, even you see, we say bhajana kriya, one takes up the activities of devotional service, but there must be some taste there. It's not completely dry. Otherwise, why should we want to take it up? There must be some attachment there. There must be some feeling of ecstasy, even if it's only a very beginning. But when this attachment to Krishna, the taste for Krishna, when they're prominent, then we're said to be on that stage.
Which stage depends on our endeavor and reach of Krishna's mercy?
Ultimately, everything depends on Krishna's mercy. Our own endeavor is only to invoke Krishna's mercy. Even the very beginning, Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bish. Even to get a start in devotional service requires the mercy of Krishna.
Are
you
someone's lecture?
Sorry?
Are you someone's lecture? Chandra Maharaj explained the nine levels of chanting. So it's four mechanical, and then after the last stages,
and
it depends.
And that may be, but like I say, ultimately everything depends. Even to be able to open our mouths and chant the holy name depends on Krishna's mercy ultimately. What were you going to ask? You just wanted to ask me a question?
Yeah, it's not related to this verse.
Okay, then go ahead and ask it anyway.
One of my friends was listening to me chant and told me I'm not saying Rama, I'm saying Ra. And he said you're supposed to say Rama. And so that I was wondering, because I learned Prabhupada, I listened very closely, then I heard
him
say, sounds like he said Ram.
Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari.
And also, what is the meaning of Ram or Rama?
Well, where is that mentioned? Somewhere in the Bengali Gaurya Vaishnava literature, it's mentioned Sholonam Bhatri Shakho. It means 16 names, 32 syllables. Maha Mantra. So to say the name properly according to Sanskrit pronunciation, we should say Rama. For that matter, we should say Krishna. And most of us don't pronounce Krishna properly. It should be Krishna.
Krishna means Arjuna. Arjuna means Krishna.
Krishna. That's it, but that's another topic altogether. I'm talking about pronunciation here. On the other hand, well, let's see now. I mean, Bengalis and Czechs, they say Ramo, Krishna. In different parts of India, there's different pronunciation. Many parts of India, they don't say Krishna, they say Krishna. Many places, Gujarat, Maharashtra, Andhra, Orissa, Krishna. Where are you from? Bihar. Okay, they say Krishna. It's nothing. Just reason I was reading, I believe it was in Jaiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that even the pronunciation isn't the most important thing, it's the bhav. But then on the other hand, you might think that the feeling, the bhav, if you actually have feeling for someone, you want to pronounce their name properly, isn't it? Just like, Giriyai. If I say, I mean, some of my experience, actually it's not Giriyai, it's Giridhari. So if that's explained to you and you still go, Giriyai, it doesn't show much consideration or respect for the person, does it? I think Dhanavir Maharaj very much emphasizes this. You have to say Rama. That's the full mantra, no doubt. But in Hindi at least, no one says Rama, they say Ram.
I'm sorry, you said in India?
In Hindi. There are many languages in India. Hindi is the most widely spoken. At least in Hindi and probably in quite a few other languages. Even if they say Ramachandra, they won't say Ramachandra, they say Ramchandra. It's a common name. So it's a linguistic practice that people have to drop the last vowel. If the last syllable is a vowel, in most Sanskrit words that are spoken in, when they're spoken in Hindi, in almost all cases it's dropped. It depends. Chandra would have to be, but then again they say Chanda, they change it. Even Krishna, they say Krishan. It's common, isn't it, in North India? Krishan. So that way they drop. So I wouldn't insist on it too much if Prabhupada himself didn't do so and himself didn't chant like that. So I'm not giving anything clear on here because I don't know any direct Shastric reference. But I mean, the Shastra tells us to chant these names. So we can chant Rama. If we chant Ram, it's not the worst thing in the world. But it might be better to chant like that. But then even more important is the bhav, or the feeling that we're putting into it. And like I say, most of our devotees, they chant with incorrect pronunciation one way or the other anyway. And again, what is the correct pronunciation? You could say they chant with non-Indian pronunciation, but then in India there are so many different ways of pronouncing. There are regional differences. What does the name Ram mean? Ravante yogino nante satyananda chidatmani iti rama padenaso param brahma vidhiyate. Rama means the supreme truth upon whom the yogis take the reservoir of all pleasure, of genuine pleasure, who the yogis take pleasure in, of unlimited pleasure. Ramante yogino nante satyananda chid, who is fully spiritual. So Rama refers to Ramchandra or Ramachandra, to Balaram, can even be understood as Parashuram, Prabhupada said, and also to Radhika Ramana, which means Krishna. Rama is also a name for Krishna. It means the reservoir of all pleasure. All right?
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Yeah?
Rama means Lakshmi.
Rama means Lakshmi, yeah.
If someone pronounces it, Rama.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Yeah,
Rama, Rama. That means, Rama means Lakshmi.
If someone pronounces in Rama, Rama means Durga.
Rama.
Yeah, Rama means Durga.
Yeah.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama means Durga.
Yeah. Well, we're all Jada. Dull-headed. But then, you see, if it's, it can all, just like bhav, that's the most important thing. So just like if a small child is calling out to the mother and doesn't pronounce correctly, still the mother knows the child is calling for me. And she accepts that. And also if you call Hare Rama, then Durga is not going to come because she's not associated with Hara. She's subordinate to Hara. Radharani. Anyway, Prabhupada would say, Chan Hare Krishna and be happy. So.
I was chanting in Vrindavan one time and one Mataji, she told me, you are not chanting properly now. And then, what's wrong? You are chanting Rama Rama. You know Rama Rama? Rama Rama means Durga. And then I told her, how you are understanding I'm chanting Rama Rama? Rama is Durga. Then she told her, okay, you see in Krishna.
Really? I don't remember that. The names of Durga are given when Yashoda's daughter, Krishna's sister, their names are given in different places. She's known as Vaishnavi, Narayani, all different names are given. I don't remember Rama. I can look it up and see. Maybe. She has so many names. Lalita Sahasrana. 1,000 names are there. Brahmanda Purana.